Hey, everybody. If you are a writer or an aspiring writer, or if you just love literature, I have a book for you. It's called Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories. It is the long-awaited craft book by Steve Almond, based on 3 decades of his writing career, a career that has featured at turns depression, failure, anxiety, self-loathing, despair, self-doubt, loss of faith, delusions of grandeur, and the occasional triumph. It's a book about the writing life. Steve Almond has done it. He has embraced it, the full catastrophe, and he has lived to tell about it. The Boston Globe says, quote, "This isn't just a book about writing. It's a book about honesty." And Richard Russo calls it, quote, "one of the best books on writing I've ever read. It's also the funniest by a country mile." Once again, it's called Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories by Steve Almond, available from Zando. Go get your copy right now, wherever you buy books.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is the Other People Podcast. I'm Brad Listy, and I'm in Los Angeles. It is Friday, and it is time for another flashback episode. Today, I'm going to be flashing back to episode 373, my conversation with author Bud Smith. Episode 373 first aired on July 29th, 2015. Bud Smith works heavy construction in Jersey City, New Jersey. He is the author of a novel called Teenager, available from Vintage. His other books include Double Bird and Dust Bunny City. His fiction has appeared in a variety of publications, including the Paris Review, The Believer, The Baffler, and The Nervous Breakdown. Bud Smith teaches creative writing and also does some work as an editor. You're going to hear me in conversation with Bud Smith back in July of 2015. Episode 373, that is coming up, dead ahead. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen. You can also subscribe on YouTube. Follow the show on social media, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and Blue Sky. Sign up for my weekly email newsletter over at bradlisty.substack.com and join the Other People Patreon community over at patreon.com/otherpplpod. Help keep this show going into the future. So today's outtake, once again, comes from episode 373. It first aired on July 29th, 2015. A reminder that the full episode can be found in the feed. It's there waiting for you. So if you like what you hear in today's flashback and you want to go in for the full hour with Bud Smith, just look for episode 373 in the feed, wherever you get your podcasts. All right? Here we go with this week's flashback. This is me in conversation with Bud Smith.
So the people from the Jersey Shore are just like normal, regular kind of people. The people on the show are like, worse than cartoon characters, I think.
Right.
Yeah. But I grew up in a campground, believe it or not, in Bayville. And it was like...
What do you mean you grew up in a campground?
We rented a house in a campground, and it was all like dirt roads and just hanging out with kids that came and rented out for the summer. Like, they would come in RVs or something. And the wintertime, the place was completely empty. So it was just me and my little brother, and we would...
And your parents.
My parents, yeah. And we would just screw around in the campground and get into trouble, basically in this empty campground.
How close to the shore were you?
We were... Maybe like a 10-minute drive to the bay and maybe 15 minutes to the beach.
Okay.
So.
A good childhood?
Yeah.
That sounds fun, kind of.
It was great. It was really cool. And, you know, like I said, it was like kind of like a resort town, so people are always coming on vacation, so all kinds of different friends.
And did your parents had to, like, work the campground or keep maintain it in order to have the house, or was the house just there?
Oh, no. The house was, like, the people who built the campground, like, decided that they wanted to build a better house, so they moved, and then they rented it out. You know, just to my parents, randomly through a newspaper.
Okay.
My dad worked as a mechanic fixing cop cars. So, like...
Like, exclusively cop cars.
Yeah, he worked at the municipal garage. So, he started out on garbage trucks. And, you know, so...
That's a good gig. That's a steady work, though.
Yeah. Except when you climb under a garbage truck and you start fixing it and hitting stuff with hammers, all the maggots, like, fall on you.
Oh, God.
So, yeah. So, he eventually graduated up to working on cop cars, which was cool when we were little because...
No maggots in the cop cars.
No maggots in cop cars. And he'd come home from lunch, like, with the police cruiser and park it in the driveway. So, we thought it was cool when we were little kids because we, you know, the neighbors always thought we were, like, in trouble with the police. And we thought that was really cool. And sometimes my dad will let us ride in the back of the cop car.
Turn the siren on?
Turn the siren on, lock us in the car. So it was cool. So, yeah.
And then what did your mom do?
My mom, she worked at like a factory, on like a factory line, like aerosol spray cans mostly and stuff like that. And I remember she used to bring home boxes of cassette tapes that we would disassemble. I don't know what they did with them, but we'd be like little child labor in the living room of the campground ripping apart cassettes. And she got like piecemeal somehow with... These cassettes, I don't know.
What do you mean she got piecemeal?
Like, for every cassette we ripped apart and disassembled, they would take them, I guess, and reuse them somehow.
Like, did you have to make sure that the parts were intact? You couldn't just shatter them.
No. You had to, like, take them apart a certain way so they weren't, like, all destroyed.
Right.
And then the company would, like, bleach off the labels and make them into something different.
And reuse them.
Yeah, it was very exciting.
Okay. So, how did you get into books?
Well, I mean...
Because it doesn't... I mean, like, it's a... It yeah. Sounds like it's not like a... Like the... What I usually hear on the show.
Oh, no. So, living in the campground, like I said, the winter times were always, like, no one was around. And...
It's got to be sort of sad, because in the summer, everyone's around.
Yeah, it was. It was really, like... It felt really isolated, even though, you know, it's not like we lived in a desolated area. Where, like, I know people, you know, Appalachia or whatever, you don't have neighbors for 1,000 miles, it seems. But, like, we had a pretty populated area, but... We had no neighbors. It was all alone.
So you go to school?
I went to a regular school.
Okay.
But, you know, after school's over, the kids weren't, like, coming to this empty campground and playing, you know. And after school, you have to come home and do your homework. So I'd be just pretty much alone. So I just really got more and more into reading and writing and drawing. And it just, like, snowballed over the years. And
your parents encourage it?
Oh, yeah. They always take me to the library. And I remember when I finally got to the point where I could drive. I didn't have a license yet, but you could drive, you know, the cars all around. No matter what I wanted to do, where are you going to go? And I said, oh, I'm going to the library. So we wouldn't be going to the library. You could always use the car to go to the library. And they were thrilled to buy books, records, anything art related.
Do they have like an artistic bent that they didn't maybe realize? Or
I don't think so. Not really. My dad loves movies. Like, we used to always go to the video store, just rent movies constantly. And my mom, she draws a little bit. She used to draw more. She's, like, really big into crafts. So it's, like, making stuff at the kitchen table, like, gluing together Christmas trees and stuff. No, they're not so much artistic.
It manifests in weird ways.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that sounds like they've got a little bit of it.
A little bit,
it's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think people who wind up encouraging that stuff in their children have, I mean, A, maybe they just love their children and they want to encourage whatever enthusiasms their kids are demonstrating, but I think there's usually a line you can trace.
Oh, yeah, they were never like, don't play the guitar because that's stupid.
Or that, you know, God doesn't like it.
Yeah, God doesn't.
The devil's instrument.
The guitar. You know, well, does God like the bass? Does God like synth? What does God like? You know, I'll do that.
The sitar.
Yeah, God likes sitar.
All right, so you're growing up there. Like, what, Jersey fascinates me as a cultural entity.
Yeah.
Like, is it Bruce Springsteen? Like, is it all that stuff, or is that kind of just a caricature?
No, I think it kind of is. I mean, so, like, Jersey in general, believe it or not, has, like, a lot of different geographical things to it. Like, there's the shore. There's actually tons and tons of, like, forests, like pine trees.
Yeah, no, it's
out
beautiful.
West, southwest. If you get up to North Jersey, there's almost like mountains in the northern tips of New Jersey. And if you go out to the west, there's actually, like, farms. So it's, like, bizarre. If you drive an hour in any direction in New Jersey, you, like, hit all these different things. It's like you almost expect, like, okay, where's the Jersey desert, you know?
Well, but it's like I think the popular conception of New Jersey is sort of like industrial wasteland.
Yeah, like Bayonne, New Jersey is where that area is, kind of where I do most of my work, my construction work. And it is.
And that's your day job.
Yeah, it's an industrial armpit, but it also has its own weird cultural kind of coolness too. It's slimy cultural. But I think, like, maybe a lot of people think Jersey, they think of, like, Sopranos, and that's cool. And it is that in a way, but it's also a lot of different. Anytime the geography kind of changes, the people kind of change. So New Jersey kind of seems like I said, you drive in, like, different directions, you meet different types of people.
What was the you said Bayville?
Yeah, Bayville.
What is your tribe in New Jersey, the people you kind of grew up with and around? Like, how would you characterize them?
They were mostly, like, the kids I hung out with, everybody was, like, wanted to be in a band or they were kind of, like, artistic in a little way. Just typical kind of, like, kicking around, just drinking out in the sand pits where we lived. I don't know. It's kind of strange. It's like they're not city kids. They're not country kids. They're like – they're just kids from the suburbs. They don't have like
– which are almost interchangeable in America.
They're interchangeable. Yeah. It's like they're here. They're here in California, suburbs of California. They're here anywhere you go. They're the kids from the suburbs.
And I've read a lot about this, but it seems like the suburbs – are thinning out a little bit, or, you know, people are moving towards urban centers.
Yeah.
More.
I mean, me and my wife, we live in New York City now, and we've lived there for like 9 years, and we were just looking maybe to buy a house in the suburbs, move out of New York City, but, like, I don't know. And then we're also looking to buy something in Jersey City, like right across the river. So it's like, I heard the same thing. It's like people aren't moving to the suburbs. It's not like the dream anymore. Like, that dream is kind of gone.
Right. The dream is to own a place in New York City.
Yeah.
Be able to afford it.
In New York City, you can't have a barbecue grill and a pool unless, you know, you're you know, rich as hell, which I'm happy where I'm at, but you know, without a college education and you know, rich parents, a pool in New York City, oh man.
Yeah, dude, you would need way more than even rich parents. You need, like, ultra rich
parents.
You
need a miracle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like $20 million for that kind of setup in New York City, just to buy the place.
Yeah, I know.
That's absurd.
Yeah, so that's not happening. But we might move back down to where we're from, down by the ocean. It kind of seems like I'm comfortable when I'm, like, kind of close to the ocean. Like, right now, here in Los Angeles, like, today I'm going to the ocean. I'm just, like, happy. I'm looking forward to that. I don't surf or anything. It just seems like...
You get in the water?
I go swimming. You know, I just can't get enough.
Be careful! There's tar balls in the ocean right now.
Oh, I'm into tar balls. I work around
you're like,
tar
you're like,
balls
dude, I
all day.
You're like, dude, I swim in Jersey.
Yeah, I swim in Jersey. I swim at my work at the oil refinery. I just jump in the oil tanks, you know, swim around. So it's all good.
Hey, everybody. If you are a writer or an aspiring writer, or if you just love literature, I have a book for you. It's called Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories. It is the long-awaited craft book by Steve Almond, based on 3 decades of his writing career, a career that has featured at turns depression, failure, anxiety, self-loathing, despair, self-doubt, loss of faith, delusions of grandeur, and the occasional triumph. It's a book about the writing life. Steve Almond has done it. He has embraced it, the full catastrophe, and he has lived to tell about it. The Boston Globe says, quote, "This isn't just a book about writing. It's a book about honesty, And Richard Russo calls it, quote, one of the best books on writing I've ever read. It's also the funniest by a country mile. Once again, it's called Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories by Steve Almond, available from Zando. Go get your copy right now, wherever you buy books.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Damn. Okay, so high school, you wanted to be in a band. You're hanging around with all these kids in suburban Bayville who, like, you know, want to do something.
Yeah, everybody in the suburbs kind of wants to do something, and everybody seemed to think that most of them wanted to, like, get out of there. So, yeah, most of my friends were in bands, and they thought that, you know, the dream is like, all right, get the band together, and then, you know, somehow, you know, you're just going to, like, click your fingers. Yeah, anything like that. But it's like, I realized, like, back then, you have to kind of just really put it all on the line. You know, you got to, like, sell all your shit, like, hop in a van and just, like, go everywhere. And, like, nobody was really doing that where I was from.
Well, they weren't, like, doing not only that, but a lot of people don't want to.
Yeah.
Like, they want to be rock stars, but they don't want to. The work to get there is hellish.
Yeah.
You're living in a van.
Yeah, for years.
Years.
Yeah.
And town to town. Yeah. It's not like on some luxury tour. And even when you get to a bus, like, who wants to live on a bus?
No. Buses are worse.
Yeah. Five people at least, you know, however many people are in the band, but you're in a bus and shared space and shitty motels. And, that requires some endurance and a special kind of wiring. And you better like the guys you're with.
Yeah. So I was always in bands with guys I really liked, but we just never really, like, did that whole thing with, you know, no one was committed enough to just, like, give up everything they were doing. So, you know, you bounce around and, eventually, I just wound up, because the band thing didn't work out, I thought, all right, well, if I do more writing stuff, if I screw up and it doesn't go anywhere, I can only kind of, like, look back at myself and say, okay, well, I didn't promote it enough or I didn't try it enough. But if you're in a band, it's like, okay, like, so you play guitar in a band, right? And you write, like, a song on the guitar and then you show it to the band members and everybody's like, okay, that's kind of cool, but I'm not really into that one thing. So it's like, millions of things fall flat with it. But if you're writing, it's almost like, well, it's only me here.
Right.
You know, an editor might reject the whole thing, but it's only me. And if it doesn't go anywhere, that's cool. But at least it was just me kind of, like, saying, nah, you know.
And as far back as high school, you were already thinking about literary stuff.
Yeah, I was always screwing around, just writing in little notebooks and stuff. And I'd say it just kind of caught on more and more the older I got, around, like, 21.
Who were some of the writers that you latched onto early?
Well, definitely Kurt Vonnegut. Just all how everything, you read one of his books and all of a sudden it led into the characters, like, what? Oh, this guy's in this book too? Or it's his, like, neighbor, or it's his cousin, or it's, like, his whatever, his son's dead and he's a ghost narrator in this one. That just blew my mind. I thought that was great, how everything kind of, like, linked together.
It's like an ecosystem.
Yeah, it was an ecosystem, and it felt, he wrote these, like, really moral cartoons almost, but it was a moral cartoon full of people that were all interrelated, and it just felt a lot bigger than some of the other things I'd read.
Yeah, I latched on to him too. It's weird. He has a powerful effect, it seems, on young people.
Yeah, definitely. So, and also, like, reading him was cool because I kind of figured, I was like, oh, this guy doesn't seem like he has, like, any rules at all. He wasn't like a hippie. He wasn't like Tom Robbins. He would just write, like, wacky stuff, Kurt Vonnegut, but he didn't have, like, a...
He was urbane.
He was
urbane, but he was also, like, somehow, like, kind of countercultural at the same time.
Yeah, he didn't have this whole set of rules. So I really latched onto that, and I thought, wow, I mean, it's just, like, do whatever the hell you want, and there's kind of no way to do it wrong.
Yeah, like, as long, you know, somehow it's got to cohere, but he was drawing cartoons in his books, and, you know, like that stuff, especially with adolescent boys. You know, he would do dick jokes and fart humor and stuff like that, and that, you know, I guess that's... He's speaking our language at that age.
Oh, yeah, speaking the language. And I just thought it was really cool being in, like, sixth grade, and I went into the sixth grade well, the regular library for elementary school, and just like looking around at the books and this big bright orange book, and I open it up and there's like a cartoon of a butthole. I'm just like,
that's all you
Breakfast
want.
Breakfast of Champions. Yeah. Oh, this is cool. All right. I'll try this and whatever. So that was cool. And it didn't hurt either that the high school, well, the elementary school librarian was really cool, and her favorite band was Rage Against the Machine, and she gave me a Rage Against the Machine cassette tape.
That's what you want from your librarian.
Yeah, fucking bullet in the head. She's like, you got to read this book. Okay.
Anyone else?
People I encourage reading. Well, my dad was always, he always had books around, but they were like, you know, spy novels and Clive Cussler, Searching for Treasure and stuff. And I loved reading all that stuff, but it didn't really, like, I was never like, I want to write a treasure hunting novel.
Yeah.
Where I'm, you know, where I'm going to go to the bottom of the ocean in a submarine and search for gold, or seduce women across the globe, like these spy novels. But, yeah, I don't know. Something clicked for me when it was more just about regular life, and then kind of regular life in these books, and then watching like Seinfeld kind of clicked for me with like, wow, these like this really great art that comes out of just like the everyday nothingness, you know.
Well, that can be really freeing once you realize you don't have to be living some grand adventure of a life.
Yeah,
I mean, because most of us, I mean, nearly all of us, are having. What is it? The very boring existences.
Very boring existences. And I got to say, like, when all of a sudden MySpace and everybody was really popular for everyone to have a blog, I wasn't, you know, the idea, just like you click around on people's blogs and you're like, oh, Jesus, this guy's writing a blog about, like, a fucking toothache. And it leads into something really good, and it doesn't have a point, or it doesn't have this grand, it's not this grand essay about anything. And that just seemed very adventurous to me, and the idea, the whole idea of that, you didn't really have to have a big, giant thing to write about. So, that's cool.
Gave you some confidence.
Yeah.
To get started.
How can you fuck something like that up? You know, if you're just going to write about nothing that matters, and you hope it doesn't even matter if it leads to anything else.
Well, it can be paralyzing. I think, like, it's the whole universality issue where, like, you know, universality in art happens when somebody gets really personal.
Yeah.
And the personal, you know, often might seem on the surface mundane, but if the writer's good and they drill down into it and they get to the depths and find the interesting parts of it, then all of a sudden people can relate.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it's really great. You know, anytime you kind of, somebody really relates to me, it's when they're not kind of pretending to be cool, you know. They're not trying to be this, like, really great, cool person. They're fucked up in some way, or they're afraid of something and they're just kind of trying to get through it, or they're just messing around and they don't really care if it just completely falls apart. It's just punk rock. They don't care if it's all screwed up.
All right, there we go. That was my conversation with Bud Smith back in episode 373, which first aired on July 29th, 2015. You can find Bud on the internet at coolgoodluck.com. Follow him on Instagram and Twitter. His latest novel is called Teenager, available from Vintage. Again, that was Bud Smith back in episode 373 in 2015. Don't forget to subscribe to this show wherever you get your shows. You can also subscribe on YouTube. Follow the podcast on social media, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and Blue Sky. Subscribe to my weekly email newsletter for free over at bradlisty.substack.com. Join the Other People Patreon community over at patreon.com/otherpplpod. Help keep this show going into the future. Join my book club or get an Other People t-shirt at otherppl.com. And if you have 2 minutes, give this show a rating, write a little review wherever you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever it is. Rate it and review it. It helps the show find new listeners. My latest book is a novel called Be Brief and Tell Them Everything. If you want to read it, it's out there in trade paperback, ebook, and audiobook editions. I narrate the audiobook, so if that sounds good, go get it. It's my book. It's a novel called Be Brief and Tell Them Everything. All right, so coming up on Sunday, you will hear me in conversation with Alejandro Sombras and Megan McDowell, who translated his story collection entitled My Documents. It is the official April pick of the Other People Book Club, available from Penguin. I had an excellent and deeply fascinating conversation with Alejandro and Megan coming up on Sunday. Stay tuned.